This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Shake them ropes. Use code ROPES. Get 100% on your first deposit. Jeff Hawkins, Chris Novembrino. Quick plug for other shows in the VOW family. Chris was a guest on this week's Music of the Mat with our friend Andrew Rich, doing, I guess we'd call it, Halloween adjacent episodes or themes, because this is like year four of spooky themes, and we're at the bottom of the barrel there, Chris.
Yeah, I noticed that I didn't get Ministry of Darkness or anything like that. We got Relic, which, as I found out this week, it's actually Killer Spell backwards.
Yes, that bit goes a while.
We went deep on that bit. I went to places on that bit that I've never gone in some other bits.
Very, very true. We are both musical geeks. I will give a quick rest in peace to one Spencer Davis, passed away at the age of 80. Spencer Davis may not be a household name for you guys, but he had a group, the Spencer Davis Group. It was a college band that go around and play local parties, and one day he decided that he'd bring along the brother of the bass player, a young 13-year-old by the name of Steve Winwood, to come in and play with them on
Little
gigs.
Stevie Winwood.
Little Stevie Winwood, member of the Spencer Davis Group. At 15, wrote their biggest hit, Gimme Some Lovin'. Other hits including I'm a Man and Searchin', which I really like their cover of. But yeah.
I have played I'm a Man live with groups. Like they're an important band. Spencer Davis Group.
Now, did you play the Spencer Davis version, or did you play the Chicago cover?
We played the Spencer Davis version. We played the Spencer Davis version.
I love that song.
Yeah, no, both are good. Yeah, I know. It's the sound of Spencer Davis Group is pretty cool. It's pretty bopping. They've got some real drive to them. I mean, and obviously just great organ playing throughout.
Oh yeah. Well, we got this 13-year-old that sounds like Ray Charles. Should we bring him along? Sure. Yeah, let's do that. And longtime listeners of this show know I'm a Steve Winwood mark. So. Sad news to that. Chris, we are going to answer some important questions this week. Like, what is the place of musical theater in professional wrestling?
I have been struggling with the place for musical theater in podcasting for years. And Jeff, let me just tell you a little something here as we get this show started. Music's important. It can fill our hearts up with hope and sometimes speak to the sadness of the human condition. And some people say that pretty much any comment is more thoughtful and meaningful if it's hit with a bed of music. I think about that sometimes. Do you ever think about things like that, Jeff?
Chris, this show was never more popular than when I was singing entrance themes of various NXT talent, usually female, so...
That is, well, no, actually, false. The show was never more popular than when we were doing XFL theme songs.
That too.
So, like we're about to really kind of cut ourselves off at the knees here with the content of the rest of the show, because our most successful episodes have been musical. But, oh, hey, we're a podcast, not a wrestling show.
Well, I was saying,
we're a podcast about the state of professional wrestling.
You are correct that our most popular episodes were the XFL ones. I was thinking previous lifetime, previous host type of things. Yeah, let's...
You had other hosts?
Some guy. There's a connection in the news to him, so we'll bring him up possibly. News this week, the Orange County Department of Health is asking Strike Team to look into 17 business locations in town where they believe COVID-19 might be spreading. Gee, three of those are WWE taping sites. The others are bars, including the Gilt nightclub, where MLW just taped a whole bunch, some gyms and a church, as well as WWE events at Full Sail University, at the Amway Arena and WWE events at the WWE Performance Center.
It just seems very, very apparent that WWE has not been taking this situation particularly seriously. And they've been able to get away with this in the state of Florida, which has a reputation for being a little bit more lax on some of this stuff. And I
feel, though, that
I'm amazed that they haven't had a bigger problem on their hands to date.
There's a weird thing with this because, as we've seen, AEW is letting fans in to watch things. So I would think theirs would be a much bigger problem, but I don't think they're in Orange County because they're in Jacksonville. So I think this might just be a county thing. Yeah.
No, but I think both organizations have been operating in a way that makes it very likely that they will be snake bit by not being appropriately risk averse. I still remember about a month ago, how things change in a month in the world of sports entertainment. But a month ago, I remember Jericho on commentary just eager as hell to get as many fans into the AEW venue as possible. It seems ill-advised.
Yeah, and of course Jericho went up to Sturgis to play that gig too.
Well, but the COVID numbers up in that part of the country are really low, right? Like, there's like not like an outbreak or a surge that's been linked back to the Sturgis biker rally.
Yeah, I'm hesitant that you can do a good job when it's, you know, you have your lab techs in the parking lot, you know, shoving a Q-tip up to your brain to swab it a bit and hoping it comes back in a half hour.
No, I agree with you on this. I mean, this is kind of the unfortunate truth with the nature of COVID-19 as we understand it, which is that you can be carrying the virus and not test positive for being a carrier for days. And so that transmission is going to happen, and the only way to not have that transmission happen is to be risk adverse with how much like contact inside of that 6-foot bubble we're doing, how many shared services we're sharing and stuff. Because yeah, dude, even with the most rigorous testing protocol and everything like that, it's still a bit of a roll of the dice. The good testing protocol makes that roll of the dice favorable, but it does not ensure 100% safety.
WWE was named by PR News as a winner of a corporate social responsibility award. They were awarded for...
Was it for the Kofi Kingston push?
Quote, in the midst of a global pandemic and social unrest, corporate social responsibility has never been more important. It's become even clearer this year that it's not enough to simply tweet a message of support. Both internal and external stakeholders expect, if not encourage, companies to walk the walk and prove their statements in actions.
No, this is a great point, Jeff. I know you just want to make fun of this. You want to just kind of
me?
Poke at this.
No.
Yeah, you want to say this company's not socially responsible. Here's the thing, Hawkins. Here's the thing. You're smug, and you got all these companies out here, and they're saying, ooh, Black Lives Matter. Ooh, we care about that. And then who's beating up Antifa? WWE. Who's actually willing to take some action?
Skittles.
Look, no one's going to meet the SpaghettiOs standard of actually caring about things in corporate responsibility.
Chef Boyardee's wearing an armband, I think. I think, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, this is the thing. WWE has risen to the occasion time and again when it comes to social commentary, and I'm glad they're finally getting recognized. I love this company.
You want an issues-based show? Shake Them Ropes is the one for you. Oh, goodness. Some talent-related...
I'm an issues guy, Hawkins.
I am so not, I guess. Kairi Sane will be providing Japanese commentary for Hell in a Cell. I'm kind of happy about that. It turns out she is
that's cool.
Brand ambassador type thing. I miss her.
No, I miss her as well. My understanding from foreign commentary, as I have been told over the years here, because I don't have much of a sense of it, is that it's a little bit looser, and it honestly can make a more enjoyable watch because like there's less oversight over to what people are saying, so they're just, you know, kind of doing their thing.
WWE has finally gotten into 2017, maybe even earlier. Lillian Garcia's podcast will join their expanding podcast lineup on the WWE Network. I actually like this move that they're doing here, doing daily podcasts, kind of like how sports radio shows are doing simulcasts on ESPN and things like that. The lineup, it's not my cup of tea.
It's weak. No, the lineup's pretty weak. The only thing I'd watch would be the New Day show.
I might watch the Alexa Bliss show. I find her charming in many ways, but, you know.
I just don't buy the uncool shtick.
Yeah.
I just don't feel like this is a person, the former cheerleader and gymnast, yeah, who struggled with not fitting in to the point where they were, like, isolated.
I think I brought this up when that show was announced. I have a hard time believing that the captain of the cheerleader, you know, it's like the, remember when nerd culture was becoming big and, like, every attractive woman who was trying to get a hosting gig put on glasses? I used to read comic books as a kid, and you're kind of like, hold on there. Doesn't make you an outcast.
The phrase was, I'm kind of a geek.
I'm kind of a geek, yeah. It's like, hold on. Yeah. I put time in, kids. I know. I got marching band pictures of myself. Don't give me that crap, lady. Yeah, but I like the idea. I think the bump is better than people give it credit for, too. But at least the problem was, like, you'd have these, for lack of a better term, bad podcasts like Stone Cold's for a while. I mean, after about the first couple weeks where he was telling harsh truths and they got rid of the first producer, it just became, well, I see on your Wikipedia here that you were, you know, became reading a guy's Wikipedia to him or stuff. And there was so much tight control with Vince. I just don't think Vince cares
anymore. No, the live ones were really cool, though, right? Like, the live Stone Cold podcast, some of which I actually did the captioning on.
Oh, those were fine.
Those were a lot of fun.
I meant the ones that you'd download. You'd have that.
No, absolutely. Those
you'd
sucked.
Have the clean version on Tuesday, and then the explicit versions on Thursday, and then the Thursday ones basically became his hunting buddy every week because nobody else would come on the show. Yeah, it Vince has kind of lightened control of the reins in order to get more viewers, and if he can, that's fine. I'm not gonna watch Sam Roberts' podcast ever, but
no,
there's an audience, I guess, for it. I don't know.
He does have that radio show out in Los Angeles, and that does pretty decent.
Maybe he's in New
right?
York.
Is he in New York?
I
okay,
he's
there
a
you
New
go.
York guy. Even
I know the coast.
I know major media markets.
Yeah, I'm in one. I'm in Dallas. Fifth.
I'll finish up the WWE side of stuff and then the AEW thing. It looks like Tino Sabatelli won Rob McCarron's favorite wrestler back in NXT after presumably leaking AEW spoilers like Eric Bischoff coming back. Tino's in his late 30s. I just don't see it happening.
No, I mean, what would happening even mean at this point? Like tag team champion?
Maybe, but I mean, every time they put him in a tag team program, it's become one of those bickering tag team partner type things.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying is I mean, when we say happening, it with a guy like Tino Sabatelli, given the current direction of the company, you don't see him ever as the world champion. The percentage of that's 0.0.
It might be he just can't progress past the level 4 O face test. You know, they spent six weeks doing the shock that somebody kicked out of my finisher face for the hard cam. Might be something like that. I don't know.
That's a tough one.
Wrapping up NXT kind of news, Xia Li, Jeff's favorite, will be doing an amateur kickboxing event on pay-per-view tomorrow.
I thought she looked really good with the hair braided up.
I'm
into
this.
I thought that was a big look. Like, and it just makes her look more like a shit kicker, man. Mm-hmm. She looked tough.
Yeah,
I liked it
too. On the AEW side, Rey Fénix was injured in his match against his brother on Wednesday, so Pentagon El Zero will be taking his place versus Kenny Omega. The camp will be strong in that match.
Yeah. I'm a huge Pentagon fan, and so it has been not the most fun year watching his work ever since he has come to this company. I liked him a lot more in Lucha Underground. And I even thought they mishandled him there. But like when they were using him right in the first couple of seasons, and they were using him very well.
Yeah, now he's just playing the hits now.
No, he's become a WWE cover band.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Five Moves of Doom version of Pentagon. And like, you know, before it was a little rough around the edges and a little too dependent on the blood and guts, like kind of Ambrose-y sort of stuff. But I think that was a marked improvement over what he's become now. Omega, are we talking about Omega now? Or are we talking?
Let's hold off on that for a second.
Okay.
We'll get through these next two things, and then we'll get into Graps talk wherever it may take us. John Reynolds, scary moment in that four-way tag team match. Knocked out cold, appears to be okay, though. Yeah. I didn't realize he was out cold at first until it was like somebody was saying, man, he's selling for an awfully long time. I was like, yeah, somebody should stomp him to keep up the gimmick. But it turns out, nope, knocked out cold. Mea culpa on my part.
Yeah, and I just very questionable decisions by, I've seen a lot of it laid at the doctor for AEW. That's fair. They may indeed have a marked doctor, but other people who are tasked with the responsibility of the wrestlers in the ring are the other wrestlers in the ring, and even more importantly than them, the referee, whose singular job is out there to, you know, create the presence and the allure or the aura of, you know, a neutral proceeding. So it would make perfect sense for him to be keeping an eye on everyone and making sure no one's screwed up. And, you know, in WWE, if anything, they go and check in on you too often. What the hell was happening here on AEW during this match?
And in a division with very little depth, Abaddon was injured in her match with Tenara Conti for the AEW Dark tapings to appear next week. I have no further information.
Oh, did Tay Conti end up joining Dark Order, did they drop that storyline?
We're going to get into that a little bit, too, because it appears they've dropped a lot of these Dark Order stories. They've dropped a lot of stories in AEW, and I want to kind of talk about that as a general purview about everything in there.
You know, if you're killing a story, you're not dropping it. Let me just put it that way.
I don't think they're
If it's a really good story, you don't stop telling it midway through.
True. So, I guess WWE first?
Yeah.
Let's talk about this Raw. This Raw was one of the worst Raws since the last worst Raw. I don't know.
Yeah, no, let's talk about this, because you messaged me this week and you go, all-time bad Raw, and I make the comment that was not a joke, although it's often hard to tell when I'm writing quickly, that there have literally been three of those in the last 6 weeks. That looking back through my logs, we have made this comment about this show about 50% of the time. And I don't feel wrong about any of those choices. Like, there was a bad one in August. I know there's a bad one in September. There has been a bad one here this week in October. So, like, no, Raw is at just an absolute trough all times in terms of quality, and SmackDown's right there behind it.
Let's take a look at this body count on Raw to see who's dead. The
Antifa?
Retribution. Dead. Not only do you have T-Bar, I believe it was T-Bar, who submitted to Lashley's lock, then the Fiend comes in and single-handedly kills them all.
And I like to call them socially unconscious in this situation.
And look, I loved the Ali promo. Would have been great before you killed him, because it's not going to bring him back to life. That's the big issue there. Matt Riddle, a guy makes a fist, a professional MMA fighter gets scared and runs back into the ring to get kicked in the head, and then a Styles clash. Dead. The women's division, the undercard. We had to have a four-way with the tag match where one of the teams had been drafted to the other show, so the draft, dead. The entire mid-card women's division gets out there, and the champs win anyway, and oh, by the way, Lana got put through another table, so that's 5 weeks in a row. Dead. What are we doing here?
Oh, what? You didn't even, you stopped before we got to the incredible musical act on this show.
Oh.
Because what sports entertainment has been needing more of, Jeff, I've been saying this. Lord knows you know it. Is it needs more live musical performances. Saying this deeply sarcastically here. Let me finish the thought.
A musical performance by a heel played straight to plug an album that's actually coming out.
Written in kayfabe. If you listen to the lyrics, it is a kayfabe album written in the Elias character's voice.
And we reignite the feud between him and the guy who wasn't really the drunk driver.
No, and Jeff Hardy does the ultimate musician faux pas. I don't care if you don't like the band that's on the stage. You don't go on the stage and start playing in the band. That they do that shit in movies. That's not a cool thing to do in real life. And I get that it's like wrestling and all of that, but like it wasn't an endearing move for Jeff Hardy to like hijack Elias's stupid set, play a couple of crappy metal riffs, and then hit him over the head with a guitar.
SmackDown. I don't know if this was good or bad, mostly. I liked parts of it.
Whoa. What about El Gran Gordo?
Oh, that's right.
you just wanted to get off this show, too. We didn't even get to Keith Lee yet.
Well, I also didn't have my list out, quite frankly. But yes, El Gran Gordo, Otis, under a mask, again. Why are we having the draft?
No, you want to talk about dead here. The entire Lucha Libre division in this company, up to and including Rey Mysterio, a bit dead. Because wearing a mask in this company is a joke. It's a thing that a bank robber does. Except, like, in this company, it kind of is.
The great fat.
The fat man.
The fat man.
Would also be, yeah. The big fat man. It was the way I would translate it.
And pretending to speak in a foreign tongue when he's given a ham.
Gotta love that. Yeah, that's funny.
I am. What else on Raw that I should?
And then we get into the attempt to rebuild Braun Strowman, which was very feeble.
Yes. Who'd he beat?
He beat Keith Lee, so we kill Keith Lee in 2 minutes and 43 seconds.
Dead.
No. It gets stupider, though, Jeff, because at the end of the match, they start fighting. They hit each other in the balls, but then, like, Keith Lee stands over him, and, like, then there's more ball hitting that happens.
We had ball jokes on SmackDown. We had fisting jokes. We had pee jokes.
Big dick jokes.
Yes.
I mean, what's not to love, dude?
I'm so broken.
It's called sports entertainment, Jeff. Like, you don't want wrestling. Wrestling is stupid, and you didn't want a wrestling alternative on AEW. You want more sports entertainment.
Yes,
and why not?
Yes.
This shit is great.
There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere for me to go. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
No, there is no oasis from this mindset, and it's pretty draining. The KO show with Daniel Bryan. Like, this would be an entertaining thing for me. I like Kevin Owens. I like Daniel Bryan. But this is written with absolutely no sense of inspiration whatsoever.
Can I ask something? Why is it every time they reintroduce Daniel Bryan, it's in this you're good, but you're not special mode? It's always with the Kevin Owenses, the Sami Zayns. And I like those
guys.
It's
because they never, ever, ever, ever want to let him catch fire again like he did in 2013. That's
exactly
your answer.
It always feels like, hey, and then they put him in a multi-man tag match with a bunch of people who are going nowhere other than maybe the Street Profits.
But to your point, it's like an ugly thing that gets put on the wall at the office that's ugly, and you know it's ugly, but you tune it out, but one day, a couple few years down the line, you remember that, like, you don't like the fact that whatever that thing is on the wall stares you in the face every day. And Daniel Bryan and his, like, routine mid-card misusage is that, like, I don't remember it every day, but, like, every so often it kind of comes into stark relief that, like, they will never see Bryan Danielson the way I saw Bryan Danielson as, like, a generational talent. I mean, right now, like right now, they're making Orange Cassidy. I see Orange Cassidy, and he reminds me of what Brian Danielson looked like a decade ago when he had the shorter hair and everything. Like, I every time I see Cassidy, I think about the way they screwed up Danielson. It pissed.
Law and Otis. We had better comedy about Otis representing himself than WWE did, Chris. This was,
and that was like throwaway crap jokes on Shake the Ropes.
Yes. This was every bad WWE comedy skit with a few member Barry references. And okay, we have witnesses to the Money in the Bank match, including Rey Mysterio. How does Rey Mysterio not bring up he was thrown off of a building? That's a laugh line.
That was
line.
So weird to me.
That is a huge laugh line that you missed. The Asuka stuff, if Asuka had done gibberish and then brought in an important piece of evidence to help the case, that's...
I would have enjoyed her explaining like a video graphic breakdown. Like she has videotape and she's trying to explain it. Like it's very obvious what's happening in the videotape. Yeah, no, like, no, there's... ways to do the Asuka speaks in crazy language gimmick that would be less stupid.
Don't get me wrong. If I popped for bad. JBL being the judge of quote-unquote wrestler court. I get the inside stuff. Teddy Long, I gotta go pee. You know, I have a briefcase full of money here. Now, look, the money sound effect made me laugh, but it was such a hokey trope, and I just went, all of this, I mean, you could have had, if you're gonna do the cheap joke at the end, it has to be set up with Otis giving some impassioned legalese, you know, citing actual
It had to be before
law.
JBL made the ruling. Yes. It had to be like, it's time for closing statements, and Otis gets up and goes, I'm looking at you in the eyes right now, Judge, and Tucky, thank you for being here. And this Money in the Bank contract is so important to me. And then after he gets done doing whatever he's doing,
I mean,
passionate, yeah,
citing actual
Murray
cases.
Murray versus Madison opened up the possibility for judicial review.
Yes, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, Miz just gave me $1 million. I favor him. Boom, out.
Yeah, yeah, my closing statement here. And then, yeah.
Yes.
Like, but...
it should be the closing statement. That should be the closing
statement.
It
was a dumb, lazy gimmick that, like, was...
I wanted this to be so much more. I did. I put too much faith.
They just don't have any depth to Otis.
Well, no, this was written for Vince to laugh as opposed to an actual good comedy sketch. And that's the difference. When you're writing for your, you know, there's a difference between popping the room and writing good comedy. And this was
no,
popping
and,
the room.
And this is very, I would argue that a lot of the comedy.
Mm-hmm. All right, Aunt Pam. There's going to be a lot of this. I got to kill my darlings this week, Chris, and I'm not feeling good about this.
Well, can we, do we do Lars and Shorty G next?
Oh, let's hold off my, God. Lars with the...
Just
for
foremost,
men.
Bianca,
where is that sponsorship
Bianca,
again?
Before we get into that real quickly, Bianca Belair and Zelina Vega had an all-time clunker of a match.
Yeah.
Like this was bad. This is actively very, very bad. Vega should not be in this position against Bianca Belair because what you're trying to do right now is build up Bianca Belair as a stud athlete. And insofar as that was the mission, this sucks.
We're getting 24 weeks of Zelina Vega and Billy Kay get killed by Bianca Belair.
Boy, I hope the matches get better then. Also, like, not for nothing, Bianca, there are a few times where Zelina's off her feet and under the care of Bianca Belair, and she's throwing Zelina around in not very safe-looking ways. Some of those... The one bump where Zelina was looking like she might be taking a dump over the ropes to the floor, but then like kind of grabbed herself on the turnbuckle there. That looked dicey.
All right, so Shorty G goes in against the newly coiffed beard of Lars Sullivan. Freak count 11 per Sean Ross app of Fightful. And then quits. Much like Austin Theory quit on Wednesday.
I mean, what's important here to remember is that Shorty G, now Chad Gable, again, thank God, is undrafted right now. And so this was supposed to be some sort of proving grounds moment for him. And what got proven to him is he's not good enough.
Yes, he'll get a ceremonial win over some member of... Oh, wait, who... I was trying to think, who's the luchador who's on SmackDown now? And I think it's Kalisto. So I figure he'll beat Kalisto for a week. And then it's just back to losing again because he's small. Right? Yeah, we're not doing anything with this.
The promo backstage where he's talking to Pierce, and he's like, they don't respect short guys, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, but they don't.
And he has a big, long something.
yeah. Well, he has a long. We're gonna get the next part of this is he is going to get rebuilt now as a heel with a big long record. Maybe we get an intersection with him and Kurt Angle.
This is Crash Holly, isn't it?
If there's any hope for Chad Gable whatsoever, it's that he gets himself aligned with Kurt Angle sooner rather than later.
We're both here for Gable being a short buzzsaw who just kills guys, but they don't do that in this company. And I don't want people to get their hopes up here. Look, he's going to be, there's something that's going to go on with this gimmick that's comedy related. This isn't him born again hardcore. I don't think. Right?
Yeah. I don't think, but it's kind of impossible to all, like, fully know, too, with this company, because, you know, they go one way and then they go another way. One thing that does seem for sure, though, is the Shorty G gimmick is dead, and that's certainly a positive. The Shorty G...
Well, it came very close to how they rebranded Bayley with that promo, because they were talking about the you can be anything you want to be if you try... type thing. It feels like they may be going that direction, and they may be doing a little bit of, like, they might rip off the Tim Thatcher vignettes.
Yeah. Okay, so here's an interesting... I don't think they're going...
Little Jeff Jarrett as an MMA fighter.
Gable and Thatcher paired together actually has some intrigue.
I'd love that.
And he did say he is quitting, so he might be going back down to NXT.
Let's just put Thatcher, Gulak, and Gable together. Give them something to do.
I'm into that.
I mean, that would be my... If I were running a wrestling company, that's what I do. But we are running a sports entertainment brand, Chris.
We review sports entertainment every week. We don't watch wrestling shows.
No, we don't watch wrestling shows. There's none of that here.
Yeah, not here in America.
All right, I've...
Bailey, you get, go.
Aunt Pam. Aunt Pam did not cut a great promo this week. That segment, the go-home for the Hell in a Cell... A match we have waited 3 years for, the hottest feud that could have been in WWE, a feud they held off on, which made it even more potent when they were going to break up. Came down to her dropping her belt when she tried to hit Sasha with a chair and getting choked into signing the contract.
Oh boy, that crossface looked like crap too.
In
their head, when they were discussing this spot, they're like, yeah, and then I'm going to have you mangled through the chair, and you're going to be bent, you're going to be all contorted, all weird, your face, you'll be like, ugh, and then, like, in practice, it looked like that.
If they are the plan for WrestleMania, this match shouldn't even be happening, in my opinion, which is why, when we get to our picks, I'm going to say what I think is going to happen here. But the buzz on this match, look, I am going to watch that special tomorrow on the network. I think it's going to be a great special if it's not kayfabe. The Chronicle on Bayley in this new heel role or whatever. I don't have high hopes. I think it's going to be very in character. but we should be clamoring over this match, and I just don't feel it. I don't feel anything for any of these Hell in the Cell matches, except
no,
maybe...
No, because Sasha's story, as her as the protagonist, is utterly uninspiring.
Yes.
There's nothing to like about it. Even if you want to just kind of really drape yourself in the kayfabe, the most you have to latch onto is, well, gee, Bailey attacked Sasha. But that doesn't even get you to sympathetic babyface. That gets you to, like, I get why that person wants to hit them back. But, you know, like, you know, I get why Johnny punched Joey and Joey wants to punch Johnny. It doesn't make me like Joey.
It doesn't feel like lifelong friends coming to a head.
That's also true. This is very bloodless.
Yes.
Yeah, like, it was very by the numbers.
It doesn't feel like the conflictedness would be there, you know, of lifelong friends fighting each other.
Bailey doesn't have a disdain for Sasha yes. Banks that I think she needs to have.
Bailey doesn't have the disdain. Sasha doesn't have the remorse because she's the good guy here. She should be a little bit.
Yeah, Sasha's all too eager to be ruthless on this.
Yes.
Like, after she finishes weaving Bailey through a chair and making Bailey in the chair one, as she's walking out of the ring with her back turned to Bailey, we should see her looking a little distressed.
I agree. Yeah, and there was a little bit of this in the contract signing at first, but they didn't follow up on it. So we misread it, or I misread it. I thought this was the path they were going to go. But no, instead I thought that promo was just poorly worded. Let's put it that way. That was just a bad promo. Why do you keep hitting yourself? Why do you keep hitting yourself? Here, sign this contract. And I'm just like, eh. I thought there'd be something clever. You know, at least it wasn't, I'll give you the belt back if you sign the contract, which it basically was, but...
A better way of doing this, right, is sign the contract or I break your ankle or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, Sasha gets a limb or something in the vice that is the chair, and is basically forcing Bailey to sign the contract or lose her ankle, with the implication being, this would be put over on commentary, oh, if Sasha Banks breaks Bailey's ankle, then she'll be stripped of the title. So Bailey has to make this decision sort of out of a rational choice.
Agreed. We'll get our picks in a second. I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, MyBookie. Between the NFL, college ball, and the Major League Baseball playoffs, World Series going on right now, Chris, give me a score check real quick. There's no shortage of games to watch, and with thousands of lines available on all your favorite sports and events, you can turn your game day into payday with MyBookie. If you're the type of guy who likes to back the big favorites, consider putting a couple in a parlay for a much bigger payout. Not only do parlays make meaningless games exciting, but more importantly, they give you a chance to turn ordinary bets into a real moneymaker. I can confirm. And don't forget the underdogs. They have a ton of value. The thing about the NFL is that underdogs are never really dogs on Sunday. Every team truly has a chance to win, and you do too. Game spreads, championship futures, and player prop bets. It's never too late to get in on the action and start turning your sports knowledge into actual cash in your wallet. Sign up at MyBookie, and when you do, use our promo code ROPES to claim a deposit match dollar for dollar all the way up to $1,000. It's a bonus designed to give you a little help and a head start on your winning season. That's promo code ROPES, R-O-P-E-S, for you to claim your bonus when you make your deposit. Stacked UFC cards, presidential prop bets, all the major sports and more. Sign up today to begin your winning season exclusively at MyBookie, and we thank them for their continued patronage for the next few months. Love those guys. All right, what's the score of the World Series game?
It's 6-2.
Yes. Okay. Good.
Yeah, I'm working on becoming a baseball organist. That lick. It's gonna need some work though.
I love those guys. They know a lot more tunes than you think. It's like, okay, play this. Cool. Yeah. So Sunday, Hell in a Cell, the the lethal lockdown of WWE, which...
I actually went to a TNA lockdown pay-per-view event live. It was good. And they ran it in Fort Worth. It was like totally a bumpkin show. It was actually very good.
I expect more filler to be added in. Maybe some tag matches, because right now I believe we only have... five matches. I was correct. Somebody's actually updated the wiki. Three of those are Hell in a Cell, so I assume there will be some cooldown matches. Maybe, you know, maybe Lana versus
Although her
Asuka.
Business is going to be up in here. Yeah, we'll have Lana versus Nia Jax match, maybe. Well, I mean, like, look.
No, I got it, Chris. I got it. Between every match, Lana should be put through a table.
It would be very funny if, like, Lana was, like, just murdered throughout the entire show. I'm with you
I'm
on
here
that.
For that. And at the end of the night, she climbs on top of the cage and she drops an elbow off of somebody and becomes hardcore. Yes. The Lana born-again hardcore stuff. Let's do this.
I think she should win the Hell in the Cell match between Bayley and Sasha Banks. Lana leaves as champion.
That's hell. Otis, your Money in the Bank contract holder with Tucker, taking on The Miz with John Morrison in a singles match for the Money in the Bank contract.
Tucker's screwing Otis over.
You think Tucker's screwing Otis? I think Mandy's screwing Otis. Nevertheless, Otis is getting screwed, right?
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. I mean,
are you
like,
sure about this? Because there's part of me that thinks you could feed Otis to Roman Reigns.
I, like, okay, so there's the other part of that, is I actually, seeing Tucker inserted here very much makes me have my doubts, and Tucker keeps saying things like, Otis is not that smart. Like, they're clearly planting this seed about, like, Tucker tolerating Otis and Otis loving Tucker. Maybe more than toleration, but like, you know how, like, sometimes, you know, one person cares about the other person more, but like an order of magnitude, that's definitely the story they're doing here with Otis and Tucker. But I think he wins.
Otis?
I think Otis wins.
Okay. I will, man, I've been thinking about it because The Miz is that guy who would get this contract, cash in at the end of the night, probably get RKO'd by Randy Orton before getting Claymore kicked by Drew McIntyre. And they'd think that they had made Drew McIntyre by doing that. But, you know, they're on different brands right now.
Right.
I have said that he will give up this contract to go be on Raw. Oh, it's just so hard because there's just so many
bad
moves.
Why does he have to give up the contract to be on Raw?
Because he's on a separate brand right now.
Like,
he could be the one to cash in. He could cash in against Drew McIntyre if you'd like.
Yeah, he could cash in on Raw.
Okay. But he's not going to win the belt, but he doesn't. If he loses, he doesn't get to stay on the show.
I still think he should cash in for the 24/7 title.
He might. That is a distinct possibility, Chris. There's a distinct possibility that Otis, the big lovable galoot, is going to cash in on a lesser title. I still...
No, because to your point, while in a better booked company, there would be a lot of intrigue for heel Roman Reigns.
Although this is against it's for the world title of your choice, I think. I think that's part of the
contract. Right, all right. So, in a different company, there would be a lot of intrigue for heel Roman Reigns versus babyface lovable underdog Tucker.
Yes, Otis.
But this company has chosen to portray Otis and Roman Reigns. They have the Cameron Grimes syndrome. I love Cameron Grimes, but like the Cameron Grimes syndrome, you got an okay flavor, and you've now you do like. I like curry a lot, but like, you know, like with curry, like a little bit of curry is fantastic, but like too much curry powder like ruins anything. They've gone curry powder on Otis, and they've gone curry powder on Roman Reigns with the Tribal Chief stuff too. So I don't know how much intrigue there really is for Otis versus Roman Reigns.
I'm going to say Otis wins this. Probably through chicanery, which will make Miz even angrier.
Maybe Mandy comes down and actually saves the day.
Yeah, and then Otis gets killed by Roman eventually. I think that's going to be the move. Okay. Jeff Hardy taking on Elias in the only singles match that doesn't have a stipulation of any kind. I think Elias gets DQ'd for hitting Jeff Hardy with a guitar.
Ooh, maybe this gets turned into a hardcore match.
I don't think it does.
I think
we get the hardcore match at TLC next in December.
Maybe.
Or November, whenever.
Yeah, right. No, we'll have like
Survivor Series.
We'll have like an American Bandstand style match or something like that.
Yeah, one of those dumb things where guitars are hanging all over the ring and you can pick. Yeah. So you got winning this.
Not my self-interest.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
I'll say Elias. Elias is standing at the end of this match, but he might lose it by DQ.
Aunt Pam, Bayley, the champion, taking on Sasha Banks, Hell in a Cell, WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. 3 years in the making. Can you hear the disappointment in my voice? This is going to be the Hell in a Cell with the screw job. This is going to be someone coming in and winning this match for Bayley somehow, I think. And then they can move one of those away. I don't see this ending cleanly. I don't see... I mean... You could give the title to Sasha. That's the problem. You could. But you have... the rookie on the come, so to speak, in Bianca Belair, that you can always build a feud with Bayley with, better than Sasha. I could see Charlotte coming back here. I could see any motion of things. I can't see this being the blow off. Chris?
Yeah, I don't think it should be. I don't think it will be. Bayley wins.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be like Seth Rollins pulling out a giant hammer and hitting the Fiend in the face with it. But
I think we'll be getting that more in the main event. I think we'll be getting more shenanigans and stuff with Roman and Jey Uso.
But this feels like non-finish, screw finish, something like that. But
it's not going to be conclusive, so I'm going to go with Bayley retains.
Okay, I will too. Drew McIntyre taking on Randall K. Orton in a Hell in a Cell match for the WWE Championship. I think Randy's going home with the title.
Yeah, I think he has to, because like there has to be a title change between these three matches, and it seems like maybe it's time to put Drew in the chase of Randy, and Randy has like a short transitional title run on his march to getting to whatever number he needs to get to. What's he at, like 13?
I think so.
Yeah, like so he does need to get a few title reigns around here. So I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah, Randy wins the title, but I don't – Randy is like top champion or whatever. I don't think they're going to do it for a very long time.
Is this –
But they might do it. They might do it through to Rumble.
Is this clean or chicanery?
It's got to be chicanery, right?
Ric Flair? Like
he's got... maybe his dad or something? Bull Bob?
I don't know. There's going to be so much crap in the Roman Reigns match that I just...
Oh,
they
God,
need to have
dude,
one.
Already,
they need
we,
to have
we
one
We didn't
that's
talk
just...
about the SmackDown seg. I was saving it from when we get to the Roman.
Okay.
I'm going to say Randy wins. I'm like icy on that one. This is just a feud that
I could see Sasha winning, and then they just keep the belt on Drew.
Right? Yeah, that's the other way. I could see Sasha wins the title, and then they keep it on Drew.
In fact, Randy I'm going Orton... back. I'm going to say Sasha wins that title because they're going to try and put a bow on the story.
Sure. Okay. So then, yeah, the Randy Orton feud, in my opinion, has just, it's lost a lot of steam. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the writers have lost interest in it. And they seem more interested in Bayley and Sasha than they do Drew and Randy, which is why we get these running in place week to weeks. I'm going to say Drew wins. You talked me into it.
I will say that as well. And then finally, Roman Reigns with Paul Heyman taking on Jey Uso in an I Quit Hell in a Cell.
Can't wait to say new world champion Jey Uso.
If Jey loses, he and Jimmy and all their entire family members are out of the tribe.
Unless Jimmy and Jey kneel in submission before Roman.
Yes. And
that was the other part of that stipulation.
The Usos are going to become Roman Reigns' reluctant henchmen.
Yeah.
I think the tribe is going to happen. I think Usos are going to be the red shirts for Roman for a while. I think you're going to get a little bit of that Shawn Michaels working for JBL type of vibe type thing. But yes, Roman Reigns is going to make Jey say, I quit, probably by threatening Jimmy.
That's been my angle, is that like we're going to take advantage of Jimmy's injuries, and like that's how we're going to break Jey's spirit. But man, they have just made Jey Uso so unsympathetic, because not like you hate him, but it's like you can see what's coming for Jey, and Jay's a grown ass man, so you'd kind of expect him to be able to see this coming for himself as well. Be one thing if Roman was doing this to his cousins who were like 20. He is doing this to his cousins who are in their mid 30s.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought you had more after
Roman's going to win. I think Roman retains here, Jeff.
I thought you had more on your bit there.
I got nothing else.
Yeah, so that's Hell in a Cell preview. I want to get off of WWE, but I feel the need to go quickly into something I liked in NXT. I don't want to go blow by blow.
Let's talk a little bit about NXT, because NXT was good. It was like the best show of the week.
Yeah, I would agree. I love Johnny Gargano and that vignette. Yeah. I love him with the wheel and being frustrated, trying to plan a strategy by practicing with the wheel. That was.
Oh, I'm going to die. That's not great. Yeah. That's not great, kid. Yeah, you know.
That was comedy done well.
Yes. No, he gets a bad rap for not having enough personality. I think Johnny has plenty of personality. I think Candace has plenty of personality. And it totally works for me.
And credit where due, they got out of the corner they painted themselves in with the Ridge Holland situation.
Dude, inspired writing out of the Ridge Holland situation.
Yes.
Because they found a way to make all of this stuff make perfect sense. So, for those of you who didn't see this, Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch defeated Breezango, the transitional champions, here to win the tag team champion. So the belts are now on. Real guys, Burch and Lorcan. Awesome. Cool. During the course of this match, Pat McAfee comes out from the bottom of the ring. He's wearing some like weird iron mask.
It looked like a Retribution reject costume.
Yeah. Only they forgot to cut out the eye holes.
Yes.
So he's wearing this mask and he comes out and runs interference on behalf of Burch and Lorcan. So they turn heel during the course of this. And then we see that it's Pat McAfee. He's back because he's still got unfinished business with Adam Cole. They kind of wrote themselves into a corner on who's the babyface and who's the heel between Cole and McAfee. They're just two guys who hate each other, was kind of the final storyline. And now that makes perfect sense as we come back around here. Who's got the money to pay off Ridge Holland? Well, very successful radio show host guy, Pat McAfee.
A man who has made $1 million in 7 different ventures.
Right, and he said that up front, too. And now you're building up to potentially a very, very cool 4-on-4 match down the line between the Undisputed Era versus Burch, Lorcan, Ridge Holland, and Pat McAfee. Both of those teams can work.
Oh, that's not happening for a long, long time, Chris, because Ridge is on the shelf for a long time.
Oh, what's Ridge's injury?
There's some torn muscles in there.
You know, sometimes you cut me off and it gets me. But in this case, that's probably useful information.
Yeah, I didn't want you to go down that path. I think there was like one dislocated knee, but on the other knee, I believe it was a torn ACL.
But man, okay, so like that might actually be like 9 to 10 months, so it might not fit in timetable wise. But you could still bring in a fourth person if you want.
Yeah.
And then build to a 4-on-4 feud between the Undisputed Era and the McAfee faction.
They had to get out of the shifty looks of Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong. And so they did it by having each get beat up at a separate time and us thinking it was staged. And it turns out it was all a red herring. Your word inspired was correct. It was, you know, what we say about WWE mysteries, it's usually the guy you think all along, or it's someone you totally shouldn't be. This time it made sense because it was someone it should be. So yes, that is a mystery done correct. Well done to the NXT team for doing that.
Really, really nice emergency rewrite. Really, really nice. Ember Moon's slowly kind of going heel. We had like a little match against Jesse Kamea where we saw more heelishness, more submission-y style.
I don't think it's a heel turn. I don't think it's a heel turn, though.
You don't really? I think it is. I think she's eventually going heel. I just don't think you work a submission style like that.
I think it's just, you know, they like the alphas. And I think it's just an alpha style. Okay. We got yet another personality reboot for Jesse Kamea, though. And just like this poor girl has to be six ways to confuse because it's obvious they see some athletic talent in her. They just can't they can't find a gimmick that works.
Well, they can't ever settle in on a gimmick with Jesse Kamea. Yeah. That was actually kind of what I was going to get to. So then we get Bronson Reed versus Austin Theory. And look, Austin Theory is a guy. This is a guy who's got a great look. He's a good talker. I like Bronson Reed. I think Bronson Reed is fine. Bronson Reed's got a limited upside guy, you know, and while I think he's got a place and like can, you know, certainly progress a little bit further from where he's at now to being a really nice transitional or not even transitional, a really nice mid-card champion. Austin Theory, in theory, is a guy you can have higher and longer term aspirations for. And so having Bronson Reed just annihilate Austin Theory twice here, I thought it was a tremendous mistake. My hope is that Johnny Gargano is going to take Austin Theory under his wing.
I thought when he quit, I thought we'd probably see him as a replacement for somebody in Retribution. I thought he'd appear on Friday as Seth's new protege. Because
again?
Well, because that would make sense.
No, okay, so it would make sense to have him come out and attack Murphy.
Yes,
that's what I meant. And try to get back into Rollins' good graces, too. Yeah, obviously, he could unite with Chad Gable and they could be the quitters.
Yeah, that's what... I wouldn't mind that team, to be honest with you. I think that'd be kind of a
good team. Until they're losing in 2 seconds to everyone who's not wearing a mask.
I don't know if this means... This is such a tough gimmick to do. It's such a tough gimmick to have a guy be a whiner and quit and come back and be strong. So I'm in...
Especially when in the case of both Gable and Theory, they're both doing it as heels... losing and then coming back as heels.
Yes.
And it would be one thing to do the adversity sobered me, made me start seeing things clearly, made me realize that I needed a change of attitude and I need to apply myself more and that I've been trying to take shortcuts and things have got to change. But like with the Gable turn, it's like, I'm a friggin' Olympian. Like, oh, well, where's that, all that Olympic stuff been? And with Theory, it's just, I mean, it's bravado. It's cockiness. And so I don't know how you get from there to something better than from there. In particular, too, because you've already got Cameron Grimes doing a better version of a lot of this stuff.
If.
He occupies a lot of that road.
You know, I like Ever-Rise. They're now at that point where the mechanics were when I really picked up on wanting them to succeed. I say we give Malcolm Bivens to them and we make something out of this team. Cause I love these guys. I loved their celebration afterwards on social media. Oh,
that was hilarious.
I don't care about the Drake Maverick, Killian Dane team. I thought, you know, look, it was the expected, oh man, you really stood up for yourself. That was great. Whatever. Ever-Rise is making them look like friggin' champions of the world. And that's who.
But to your point, though, the Drake Maverick grabbing the chair and actually hitting them with the chair and getting, like, that was the most positive characterization of Maverick we've had in weeks.
Yes.
And then, of course, he went back to the stupid dancey shit.
Yes, after they cleared the ring and lost the match. Back to the whistling, dancing, comedy, sports entertainment stylings that we've come to love in NXT. Mm-hmm. But yes, put Malcolm Bivens with Ever-Rise, please. Now.
Oh, yeah. No, and because the Ever-Rise guys are going to have that fun personality-driven interaction with their manager.
As opposed to being the two growling Indian fellas.
Like the way Cornette was able to do it at various points with the Midnights, where like they wouldn't just be standing.
Yes.
Especially once Stan Lane became part of the team.
Yeah.
They would be interacting and kind of, you know, goading Cornette on further.
This is more though Eaton and Condrey, because those two guys are you know, they're French Canadians. They got a good grasp of English, but probably not a great grasp. So Bivens could really be the main spokes guy, and they could bounce off of him. And
they're better at English than you're giving them credit for.
I think I'm wrong on that. Yeah, I think you're right. I think I'm wrong on that. I'm hedging my bets here.
And then we had a really cool segment. We've already kind of talked about Xia Li, so I don't want to revisit that.
I hated this segment.
No, it was stupid because Lee just needs to murder someone, right? Like, she at this point, she just needs to be, like, brutal.
Chris, the story is about Xia Li, and she's in a match with
and then
Daisy
Raquel
Canzaro,
Gonzalez
and then Raquel
shows
Gonzalez
the
comes in and kills them all. I'm just like, let's kill this entire division, too, for Raquel Gonzalez. And I like Raquel Gonzalez. She was unnecessary.
I mean, she's fine, but, like, this is completely pointless into building her up for this match against Rhea Ripley.
Yes, it's pointless.
Unless Gonzalez is going to win against Ripley.
Yes.
Which I don't think, which I think is a possibility.
You hit it on the head. It was pointless. There's no...
It's pointless.
The character development here is about Xia Li and Casey, and...
You cannibalize the entire undercard of the women's division in order to get over this top of the... Not even, an upper mid-card women's division match here with Rhea Ripley, who's... You know, not the hottest she's ever been right now. And Raquel Gonzalez. And, like, you didn't need to do this to build up Raquel, because if Raquel beats Rhea Ripley, it's more than beating up Casey Catanzaro, Xia Li, and Caden Carter all at the same time, because Rhea Ripley's a former champion. Then we get to Cameron Grimes. Love Cameron Grimes. Hate this pairing with Dexter Lumis. I get that it makes sense. I get that it's the Halloween season and we want to have a Haunted House of Terror match with the creepy guy, and Cameron Grimes is the perfect person to do scare stuff with. I just, you know, like, Cameron Grimes is better than this.
No opinion. Much like NXT UK, which we don't need to talk about. I don't want to.
Then
talk
we
about
get that. Into Timothy Thatcher, and I enjoyed this segment with Andrew.
Andrew Green, a little bit of a throwback from Evolve. I loved his gimmick.
I thought that this was a really nice usage of the Thatch Can School segment, porting it into something akin to a squash match, but a squash match with a specific flavor. Just all of this stuff worked really, really well.
Agreed.
I
loved this. I would love to see Green become part of, you know, Thatcher gets, you know, the nice respect thing. He becomes part of the heel stable, you know, as opposed to just, you know, being the upstart student that I think that's what they're going to do with him. I think they're going to turn him babyface against Thatcher, and I'd much rather have Thatcher have an army of killers. But
that's interesting. I don't know if they've really settled in yet on
either.
What they want to do with the Thatch Can School. Because I think you could go one way where he has essentially a faction, four or five guys that, you know, like, that kind of like Imperium, I suppose. I don't know if he joins Imperium. It seems like they've got different plans for him. As we mentioned, Chad Gable just quit SmackDown, and he would be an interesting pairing with Thatcher down there on NXT. But I like this segment a lot. And I thought, I can't believe I am saying this, because if you had asked me 6 years ago, who's a guy that, or 4 or 5 years ago when we were sitting eating barbecue and watching Thatcher in the ring, who's a guy the WWE would just simply never understand how to utilize and would never make anything interesting of, and would have been like a Duke the Dumpster Drossy type of guy. And Thatcher is absolutely that person.
Oh, my top two are Thatcher and Gulak.
But in the case of Thatcher here, they have managed to not only tap into his oeuvre, they've actually been able to enhance it and actually build on the stuff that he was bringing to the ring and make him a more complete package. It's been a very, very generative marriage between Thatcher and the company.
Chris, what... I don't know, even know how to introduce this. What role does musical theater have in professional wrestling?
What role does musical theater have in professional wrestling, Jeff? Why... it has every place in professional wrestling. Why is it playing a minor chord? This should be major. Like, we need, like, step one, if you're going to write a musical number, you got to start with a major chord. And then you've got to go into your bassy voice and sing, "We need more musical theater." I don't know where this is going.
I think we
got to talk about MJF, though, right?
Yeah, the people who do musical theater are very talented people. Musical theater as an art form is hit or miss. Most of my nightmares about musical theater are you're doing a improv show and there's that one guy, if the show's going bad, he starts to break out into song to turn it into a musical to get the cheap laugh, and everybody's just looking at each other going, "We gotta support this crap." I like some musicals. I think some musicals are very inspired. I think most of them stink, Chris. I think Stephen Sondheim is overrated. I like some of Andrew Lloyd Webber. I think Les Mis is fantastic. I think there are some genre rebelling ones like Avenue Q and 25th Annual Putnam
Avenue
County.
Avenue Q is great. Yeah, Avenue Q is that's a fun
25th
one.
Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee is a lot of fun. The Book of Mormon is a hell of a night out.
Yeah, that's a fun show, too. Yeah.
But it's also turned into a lot of movie, you know, it's turned into a lot of IP with a weak storyline in there. You know, your jukebox musicals like Margaritaville or Escape from Margaritaville or Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark or Disney movies on a live stage that basically just do the same soundtrack as the movie. It can move you. It can not move you. I guess
I don't really see a way that it intersects in a useful and generative way with professional wrestling for anything other than maybe.
Well, let me
an
continue.
Opening segment on WrestleMania or SummerSlam. If you had a 4 or 5 hour program and you want, WrestleMania would be a good one, and you wanted to bury a musical number in the course of the 4 or 5 hour show, I completely get that. But as the genesis and sort of like an inflection point of an intense rivalry for your upper mid-card of your program, especially on your weekly television, I don't know that I get that.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on... Oh, I'm muted. Oh, there we go. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I don't want my upper card guys doing this. I want lower card guys. I was going to transition into, for some reason, look, every television show that does musical episodes, they all come off as self-indulgent and as the will of the star. Even if the show is built around music, like Glee or High School Musical.
I'm gonna push back on you one concrete example. The Buffy musical.
I knew somebody was gonna bring that Once More with Feeling. No. Of course I never watched.
Okay,
Buffy.
At him. I am not a co-signatory on that shit.
That was fully self-indulgent. That was, you know, Drew Carey got a lot into musicals towards the end of the run there. Okay, fine. I'll give you Once More with Feeling. I've never seen it, so I can't comment on it. But everybody always brings up, "Oh, the Buffy musical episode was great." I'm like, it wasn't even that good of a show. I don't like science fiction, so, you know, at me all you want. Yeah.
Please, just don't at me on this, because I don't want to have to play defense on these garbage takes. These crap-ass takes.
This is my worst take ever, and I'm going to dig into it, baby.
We haven't even gotten into Jericho versus MJF. Dancer.
The Busby Berkeley stuff was fine. It's just, it's it's become a TV trope, and I think that these AEW people are looking at television and going, what can we do because it's a TV show. Wrestling's a TV show. MJF, I guess.
You know who thinks like that, though? Vince thinks like that.
Jericho thinks like that.
I remember the Freddie Prinze story. It's like etched in my brain of like, you know, he's watching a movie or something on the airplane, and Vince goes, why would you do that when WWE has comedy, drama, all of the things? And I've heard AEW compared to a buffet, that is not a wrestling program. That's a sports entertainment buffet. And I've heard this term used, like, I'm not saying this pejoratively. I've heard this term used by people defending the product. To which I would point out to people that the food at a buffet generally sucks. And there's a reason why they have to put a lot of it one after another. It's because no particular dish is really worth eating.
If this was some kind of deconstruction of what WWE does, and it had ended in like a bloody brawl, I would have accepted this.
You know, when they do deconstructions, though, they're about as inspired as Law and Otis. Like, it's like, oh, stand to the side of the television with your back turned to the TV and then look over your shoulder. Just like those idiots in WWE. Got them. It's not like a deep biting satire. And then in the case of this was quite frankly, like it's the self-indulgence problem. And like with Jericho, man, if y'all don't see it with Jericho at this point, I can't actually spell it out any further. You either see that Jericho is high on his own farts, or you think that this guy is just the funniest dude in the world and you wish he was your dad. And there seems to be absolutely no middle ground.
I saw a lot of people really liked this. And a lot of people in the commentariat really liked this. I'm not going to go after those people.
No, you know, here's the thing.
I'll say about that. Oh, go ahead.
No, hold on. Let me get my shit in on my show.
Sorry.
With that, okay, it's fine to say that people are grumpuses who are just purely
nostalgic.
Nobody
ever says that about us, Chris. No.
Just purely fetishists for nostalgia. But what it gets back to is what was AEW supposed to be when it was kind of launched, when they were first doing All In and everything like that, the wrestling alternative, versus what has it become? What are the expectations of the fans of AEW from week to week versus their expectations and their criticisms of WWE from week to week? What made them stop watching WWE in the first place? Or why do they at least performatively say they don't watch WWE anymore? And if the answer to that is because this is a company that over the last decade has become obsessed, not just the last decade, has become obsessed with sports entertainment and likes to say sports entertainment at every single point and likes to mock wrestling as even a term at any single point, then you might be someone who is clamoring for an alternative. And that's what AEW initially presented itself to be. And what we have seen it do over the last year here, MJF's really kind of a key indicator of this. MJF started off as a pure classic wrestling heel. Mm-hmm. He was a dick.
Yes.
He was a spoiled little boy.
Yes.
He was a jerk and he was privileged. He had a great body. He was actually talented. And that's the stuff you kind of didn't like about him. He's a good looking dude who's actually talented, but he's got all the money. He's got all that privilege and stuff to boot. So he's able to augment his natural gifts. And he knows he can augment his natural gifts with stuff that's essentially on the edge of cheating. What MJF has arced and trended towards over the last 6 to 8 months here is comedy shtick. Epitomized perhaps best by the last gimmick he was in here, which is I'm running for president of AEW to be your champion. To come out of that, needing a serious, meaningful rebuild to get back to being, you know, top level heel guy with the scarf and everything, he needs something serious. And instead now he's sucked into this gimmick where maybe he's trying to do an inside job on the inner circle. Ooh boy, I can't wait to see how this pans out. And he's singing musical numbers with Chris Jericho. If you don't see that that's a problem, like if it entertains you as you had a fun 90 minutes watching TV this week, great. That's fine. WCW got into that mindset very heavily in the last 3 years of WCW. It's a dangerous mindset. You need to be thinking about, where is this all going? What is the thing that we're doing right now in service of, and slash or, what is the thing we're doing right now, perhaps chopping the legs out from underneath on future projects? And this really didn't rise to that occasion. And fans who are mad at me, or like who think that I just like want Midnight Express matches forever, I would just throw this out here. I spent a good chunk of the last decade reviewing Lucha Underground because I've been looking for an alternative to Vince McMahon's sports entertainment vision. I'm jonesing for it. I remain jonesing for it. This is not it. This is TNA Impact. Thank you.
No, that's fine. The worst for me in terms of judging it as a success or a failure, and you've seen this in political commentary, in a way, where there'll be some hot button issue of the day, and a reporter who doesn't want to go on record necessarily with their opinion will do something like, well, my 4-year-old looked up at me and asked, why do we need the Electoral College in the United States, Daddy, when we could have a, you know, that kind of analysis.
Yeah, the out of the mouth of babes. Yeah, yes, it's a way of supplanting your thought into your child.
I showed this to my girlfriend or boyfriend who doesn't watch wrestling, and they said if there was more of this, that they would definitely watch. And
that's what they do in the IWC. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, they'd love to watch more musical numbers. Yeah, okay, but like, here's the next part of this.
Let's do
like,
Miss Saigon and just drop a helicopter on everybody.
Suppose your boyfriend or girlfriend said that. Now I want you to actually, like, thought process out, like, what does a wrestling show anchored by musical numbers look like? It looks like, well, one, it's not a wrestling show at that point, it's a sports entertainment show. But, like, how do you do that and keep up energy for 6 months on that? And also, like, the goal here is to bring in new people to check out a wrestling show. Sports entertainment's like a term that we all know, and we generally know it as like a joke. Like, they when normies tune in to the thing that is on your TV screen that's got the ropes and the men and the spandex, they call it wrestling. And they're looking for stuff that involves, like, big suplexes, going through tables, you know, burly dudes yelling into a microphone saying maybe, like, not quite okay things. Like, that's what they're looking for. That's what they think wrestling is. Or Ric Flair type people going, woo! Like, that's what they think wrestling is.
They want
badasses.
They
don't think it's musical numbers.
They want,
yes. Ric Flair didn't sing musical numbers, Jeff.
He did light comedy in his promos, but he was a badass and could get away with it. He was a kind of a dandy at that thing. Your thing about MJF kind of leads into a bigger problem I have, in that there's not a lot of character development that's been going on. We've dropped certain lines, like, what is Colt Cabana doing in the Dark Order right now? They're kind of relying a little bit on being the elite for that. But
on commentary this week, I think it was JR who basically kind of brought up, oh, we haven't really seen Colt Cabana do a bunch here the last few weeks. I'm like, oh yeah, we haven't. That was a key storyline at one point.
Other than Eddie, who has been fantastic on promos, who are my serious heels here? Because as much as I love Fear the Revelation, FTR, whatever you want to call them, they have been an absolute disappointment on the mic and in tone because they look like they're playing bad guys out there. You're trying to get heat on them by them breaking the ankle of the guys who are going to be turning into the NWO, it looks like, in terms of smarmy heelness, between the Young Bucks kicking announcers and Kenny Omega doing his shtick.
Yeah, no, like, let's talk about that part of this, too. So you're building up to this FTR versus Young Bucks match, and the go-home on this is, because the match is this weekend, right?
No, it's November. It's in November.
It's in, all right,
the pay-per-view.
Yeah, sorry. But, like, the big setup on this is an injury angle. But we've been building up Matt and Nick Jackson as heels since the last pay-per-view, which is not a very good pay-per-view, by the way. Like, we've been building them up as heels. So when FTR breaks the super kicking Tony Schiavone ankle of Matt Jackson, why would I care?
Exactly. Exactly. It's it just leads me to think that all of this is going to be because they're going to be doing the Too Sweet Bullet Club kind of light. Like, Kenny Omega to me is not going to be Ric Flair in terms of championship heft. He's going to be,
oh, you don't say,
Kevin Nash, Scott Hall with the comedy and stuff. And don't get me wrong, I loved his destruction of Sonny Kiss. I thought that
No, but he's not about to go back to being the cleaner for real. Right. If anything, they're doing like a satirization of when he was, which this is the problem, man. You can't have everyone be in comedy. Like, even in the sports entertainment formula, if you want to go, oh, it's a sports entertainment show. Sports entertainment shows have never been this reliant on wacky zany in terms of ratio.
And that's the weird thing here. And you had Orange Cassidy doing the old Bill Belichick on to Cincinnati gag, which nobody who doesn't watch football.
Right. Got. Yeah. No, I knew that was a reference, but I didn't understand. Like, here's what I liked about
it. Okay.
That.
Let me give you context of it in case you don't know what it was. Okay. Or for the listeners who don't know what it was.
Oh, okay, that'd be good.
The New England Patriots lost a game. Don't know who it was to. It might have been Jacksonville, as a matter of fact. But they lost the game, and when asked about it at the press conference, Bill Belichick, who is a known cranky ass in his press conferences because he just doesn't suffer fools and also doesn't want to give anybody any information, the only answer he gave after the loss is, we're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati.
And it's
what do you think of the offense today? We're on to Cincinnati. That was the only, and that's what Orange Cassidy did in this thing.
And it's a way of illustrating exasperation while being terse. In the case of Orange Cassidy, he needs to be terse and show frustration and do it all with a limited vocabulary. So I get that. It was fine. But to your point, I knew it was a reference, and I knew it was like a sports reference. Obviously, we're on to Cincinnati. Like, it wouldn't make sense in any other context. But I didn't, like, it had been so long since I had seen that. It's not etched in my brain like let's say, Allen Iverson talking about practice.
Yeah. And that's what, yeah. Although, the one thing I really, really dug on this show, I thought the Jungle Boy Wardlow match was everything it should have been.
Oh, I liked that match. So I know we've been really down on the Skitlets,
yeah.
And I have no intention of kind of changing my tune on that. But no, Wardlow and Jungle Boy were really great in this opening match here. Eddie Kingston, to your point, I think Eddie Kingston is I'm so glad that like people are seeing in Eddie Kingston what I have seen in Eddie Kingston. That's really cool. But two, like I love that Kingston is essentially like a bigger, tougher version of Jon Moxley. Like he's maybe even a better promo than actually he is a better promo than Moxley. And
he
like
sells
the
Wolf tickets, and that's what I love about him. He's the one guy that I take seriously in terms of cutting a promo. And I think going back to your point, I think that's a feature and not a bug. I think they want just the one serious angle to make you go, okay, that other stuff's fake, but this is real. But I think it's backfiring on them.
No, it's dragging down the main angle. So when I think back about Lucha Underground and what I liked about Lucha Underground and where AEW is falling short, like the contrast that I do in my head is that Lucha Underground, this is definitely not, you can sit and pick nits with me about like where they got inconsistent. I'm aware of all of it. But like what they did well for seasons one, season two is, yes, they built a world. Things were consistent within that world, but that world was inconsistent with the world that we all live in, so different things can happen inside of that world. Whereas AEW, some stuff's serious, some stuff's comedy, some stuff has like spooky-ooky angles to it, other stuff is spooky-ooky, but it's actually kind of comedy, like the Dark Order. Like it's I mean, even the Dark Order is a good example. Dark Order started off as a serious thing, and now it's degenerated into a comedy thing. Like, there is no consistency in this world. And so when a decent chunk of this show is driven by comedy stuff, it's hard to know what's comedy and what's jokey.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought you were going further on that.
I give you a guy like Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks is really great. I love Ricky Starks. I think Ricky Starks is a good level talent, a high level talent. But like Ricky, one week is a serious guy. You know, Body Donna, which is not a word.
That entire Taz crew is inconsistent.
Right, right. And that inconsistency, what happens? To kind of coin a term for this is a lowest common denominator effect. And the lowest common denominator in sports entertainment, professional wrestling, whatever you want to call it, is funny. Everyone can do pratfalls in wrestling. They practice to do bumps and stuff. So they can always get back to funny. But, you know, it's that line. Funny isn't money. Where does that come from? It's not like if you do one funny match, you'll never work again. You'll be destitute and in the poorhouse. It's that if a company runs funny stuff, it kind of exclusively, what you end up with like Chikara. And there's a reason why Chikara never got a national TV contract. Probably a few reasons,
because I thought they'd be perfect on TV.
Well, now even more. You get what I'm saying, though. Like,
yes.
AEW, WWE, these are shows that want to keep like a TV contract. And I think they'd be putting that in peril if everything was, you know, pee jokes every week. Yeah. Lord knows Vince wants to test that.
You know, men who watch wrestling want to watch ass kickers talk trash. Children who want to watch wrestling want to laugh and clap at the funny characters. I think that's just my opinion.
I think the intersection there between the older audience and the younger audience is that I remember being a young kid gawking at all these strange people on the screen, like these people who seemed like they were from, you know, not just like distant lands in other countries, but like, you know, distant places, like, you know, Glacier, where is he from?
Well, see, that's interesting. No, because I want to go into a little bit about this because it's a generational thing. Like for me, watching these burly men talking about making guys bleed and breaking arms and stuff like that, to me, it felt like I was watching, and I really was, I was watching something I shouldn't be watching. You know, there's that element of danger type thing.
Yeah.
Whereas you come in the Attitude Era and it's, you know, it's, you know, it's spectacular stunts and guys in flashy costumes and gimmicks and stuff. So
yeah, I mean, shit, it's Kevin Sullivan as the Taskmaster, like the evil Hulk Hogan gimmick and the Dungeon of Doom and stuff. I mean, Jimmy Hart, like these people who, like, I remember I'd go like, what does Jimmy Hart's closet look like as a kid? that's the sort of stuff that, like, I don't know. I think good wrestling sort of, it kind of makes you, it whisks you away a little bit. But I'm with you too. Like, I also liked, I like the element of danger. The other thing I liked about wrestling, and I think as a kid or as an adult, this is the thing that people like, is at its best, a wrestling program feels like a place where anything can happen. Or like, not anything, like, not like it's
like a musical?
Not a musical. Not a friggin' musical. But, like, you know, like, I don't know, some crazy boxer might show up and just start, like, knocking out everyone in the main event. Like, that in wrestling, that can happen.
What's the worst musical you've ever seen?
Dude,
and I don't mean, like, a middle school production of a good musical. I just mean, like, one where you go, this story is just stupid. Why am I watching this?
I don't think Tommy is that good of a story.
I think as a rock opera, it's pretty good. I think as a Broadway show, it lacks quite a bit.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a very good story.
I'll tell you the one I was thinking of was, because I was dragging Sondheim, Assassins is such a terrible musical. It's basically musical vignettes about people who tried to kill presidents. As a musical.
God, who couldn't get into the deeply sympathetic story of James A. Garfield's assassin?
Yeah, I tried to get a government job and you said no, so I went to the train station and killed you. You know, Squeaky Fromm isn't exactly a, a sympathetic character. All right, I'm done complaining. I'm just hoping for a better week. I'm probably not going to watch this pay-per-view live. I don't have a podcast to do afterwards, but if you do, tell me what you thought of it. Tell me what I should watch. Chris, plug your stuff.
Yeah, so my other show is called Don't Worry About the Government. You can find it over at don'tworry.tv, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, all of those fine places. And you can find my show's Twitter at DWATG. I guess, you know, we have a Patreon. We just don't do it very often. You can go to patreon.com/shakethemropes. Check us out over there. And, yeah, that's
Oh, the Oz TV show had a musical episode. That one was god awful.
I forgot that they made an Oz spinoff.
No, it wasn't a spinoff.
Oz, the prison show.
The prison show had
They made a musical in the show? Oh, jeez.
In the last season, they had a musical one, and it's weird and campy, and it's just kind of like you're watching it, and you're watching, like, J.K. Simmons do certain... It didn't work. It was ambitious at the time, but I watched it now, and it's, like, cringe. Anyways, you can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow him at Chris Novembrino. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. We'll try and do better next week. Thanks once again to MyBookie. Use code ROPES. Double your first deposit. Chris, I'll give you the last word.
I don't need to do better. They need to do better.